This episode of Sactown Talks is brought to you by Elk Grove Power Sports, Northern California's premier recreational vehicle and power sports dealer. Whether you're in the market for a Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Ski-Doo, Vespa, Moto Guzzi, or more, Elk Grove Power Sports Showroom off Grantline Road in the 99 should be your first stop. More information online at egpowersports.com. Don't forget to tell them Jabron sent you. We're also brought to you by ESAC BJJ, your host Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy. Conveniently located in the Camellia Shopping Center in East Sacramento, we harbor a positive and inclusive environment so that everybody feels welcome to come and foster the art. Whether you're an expert level practitioner or just getting started, there's a place for everybody at ESAC BJJ. Adult classes start as low as $75 a month, and we offer children's classes too. More information online at esacbjj.com. I'll see you there.
All right, and we're going. It's another episode of Sactown Talks. I think it's episode number 40 with the Proud Network, Johnny, Aaron, and Naveed. Naveed of Extra Cheese, thanks for bringing by the shirts. We're going to keep them in the back for a while. And I'm actually repping the Doom shirt myself. It's actually a funny thing because it's like an interesting line of demarcation to understand kind of where people are culturally with the Doom shirt. Because I've had a number of white boys be like, oh, dude, you're a gladiator. You do jiu-jitsu, man. You're a fucking gladiator. Yeah, cool, man. Like, I saw that Gladiator's my favorite movie. And then, other people who, actually know, they're like, oh, dude, Doom is, the greatest rapper alive.
You know? Yeah, he has this huge cult following, so I feel like it's, people get the Doom and being under the name Extra Cheese. You know, he has a song called Con Queso, and he just talks, he raps about food a lot, you know.
Yeah.
He's almost a comedian, in some of his songs. He's a funny dude. But, you know, that's just the type of stuff I try to tap into is, pop culture, hip-hop, music culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, just things that I'm interested in that I think, you know, other people relate to.
Yeah. No, you know, it's interesting. I feel maybe somewhere in the mid-2000s, And you know, for folks listening, we're going to get into the Proud Network stuff and just talk, you know, catch up a little bit, but, you know, it's never a bad time to stop and reflect on hip-hop, so. Hip-hop, rappers did kind of become comedians somewhere around, the early 2010s, I don't know, it wasn't too long ago where, I feel like hip-hop was, really serious, especially, that certain genre of hip-hop was, always kind of serious, but,
you know. It didn't start off that way, though.
It didn't start off that way,
because, I'm older than both everyone in the room, probably at least 10 years older than everybody here.
Yeah.
And there was Biz Markie, who was always really funny.
He's goofing around.
And the 80s stuff was pretty, it was always that kind of tongue in cheek and goofy. It wasn't until
East Coast versus West Coast
gangster rap came in where it started getting more confrontational, kind of hard. Yeah.
And I never identified with that kind of stuff. I'm into more carefree, fun stuff with art and hip-hop, everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather hear about food than, you know, drive-by.
How many bitches you got on your yacht?
Yeah, that's not, I don't identify with that kind of stuff. So
my apologies to all the bitches on yachts. I apologize.
I'm sure they understand.
It's funny, one of my favorites with the wordplay is actually Lil Wayne. He has this line that I think is just hilarious. He says, a real G's move in silence like lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's a silent G.
Yeah.
I
say the G. I call it lasagna.
Lasagna. Yeah. There you go. It's distinctive. It's your distinctive mark.
I mean, everyone rolls their eyes at me and is like, that guy's an idiot. But
you would like that line.
Yeah, that's how
I. Hey, guys, I'll remind you to.
Sorry, man.
Table. Yeah, no, it's okay. It's everyone does. It's just we're going, and for folks listening, we're going on the Yeti mic. If you watch the video that we did with Latest Faith and the Fontaine Classic, this is a really good room mic. And that way we don't have to mic up four people, but it tends to catch everything like this. Mm-hmm. So it's not a big deal. Let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing with the, you know, formerly The Proud Show, now The Proud Network. You know, we met up on Instagram. And again, you know, I just think it's so cool what we're doing with this format. It's kind of like I figured, you know, I'll just kind of start the podcast and see where it takes me, you know, just see where it takes me. And love what you guys are doing with the, you know, with the Proud Network. And maybe you can kind of tell me about how you got the idea, what you're doing, where people can find you, and sort of this sort of, you know, Proud Network, you know, Proud Show 2.0, the Proud Network. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the Proud Show started about 2 years ago now. It really was me trying to find, trying to explain, because I actually grew up in Fremont, California, which is about 2 hours away, for those who don't know, in the Bay Area suburb, and moved out here. You know, this is kind of like passing over my schooling in the city, and then my time in L.A., but coming back to the Bay Area, made our way out to Sacramento. Yeah. And so getting straight to the point, friends and family were making fun of me. In 2012, they were like, what do you, actually, was it 2000, yeah, what are you doing in Sacramento? You know, you must be bored out of your mind. And I didn't really have anything, you know, I don't know how to counter that. I said, the mix is really fun. You know, I feel like the mix is a place where it's literally a mix of people and you could go out and have fun. At this point, my wife and I were still in party mode. So I said, come up and we'll take you to the mix. It's awesome. Let me just tell you.
The building on, like, where Lowbrow was at?
The nightclub.
You
know?
Yeah. Then I go. No. Well, it used to be where Lowbrow.
No, it was always next to DeVere's.
Yeah, downtown.
Oh, I thought
it's where the new Johnny Cash mural is, you know.
Oh,
yeah, like, I don't go downtown anymore. Yeah, no. But, you know, again, this is like, I've always visited Elk Grove. My family's a Filipino family, so they're all in Elk Grove. So I've always came up here every summer and just didn't know anything about Sacramento, right? Like, where am I at? I remember having, like, images, like, downtown, cool. And then 10 years later, I was like, I think I've been here. But in the end, again, people were just saying, what's up there? And I was like, there's a lot happening. Let me just film it. You know, let me just, a great way for me to meet people, you know, with like these two that sit right beside me, because it's something that I always had fun doing. You know, I have my background in video. So it kind of just organically happened that way. And then we started out doing a lot of videos just on people like Navid because he's an artist. I do know Johnny through his girlfriend. I used to work with her. Mm-hmm. So again, Johnny did podcasts, so I talked to him. So like we wanted to do pieces on each other. And then at this point, kind of if we jump a year later and a few kind of like different ideas, we've come to a place where we're now the Power Network, and we have these shows. We have a few shows, one that Navid hosts, and basically what we're trying to do is create the Vice for Northern California. You know, so it's like real stories, real shows, covering the events, covering all the cool, awesome things that come out of Sacramento, but that could also connect with people in New York. You know, could connect people all the way on the other side of the world. Saying, oh, that's, I like that content. I like that. That's really cool. Where does it come from? Sacramento. Okay, I heard about it. You know, 2002.
I saw Lady Bird. I thought that's all that was.
Yeah, I thought it was just in there. So again, you know, it's a lot. That's kind of where it started, and that's kind of where we're at now. Man.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about Sacramento. Like, it's, I keep saying it's kind of like that old hen that you settled down with, you know, but in a good way, right? Like, it's tough to get my own family to visit me out here. You know, they're in San Diego. They won't come see their boy.
It's funny though.
I lived in San Diego for 8 years. I never left. Yeah. I remember I came up here on leave. I was in the military at the time. Yeah. And I came up here in the middle of the summer. I was like, what the hell? And it was so hot. And I was like, why the hell did I leave like beautiful San Diego to come back up here for 3 weeks?
You know what I'll say about San Diego? What part of San Diego are you from?
I lived in the North County. So like Carlsbad was mostly Oceanside. Encinitas.
Yeah. Get in trouble in Del Mar and Encinitas and stuff like
that. Yeah, I mean, we went all over the place. We used to go down to Baja all the time. And,
Yeah, so I grew up in, I went to Mission Bay High School in Pacific Beach.
Oh, okay.
So I grew up surfing and doing karate and smoking dope. It was a fucking wonderful childhood.
Yeah.
But you know, when I moved up because I wanted to work for the state legislature. I say, you know, be careful what you wish for because you'll receive it. And now that I'm not there anymore, I'm doing my own thing, teaching martial arts. You know, it's, you know, it's made me feel like, well, what am I doing up here if I'm not working for the legislature as well? So I'm enjoying this beautiful fucking city, you know? One thing that is, I think, really nice about Sacramento compared to San Diego, and I know it's a tough sell, but just bear with me here. Mm-hmm. Having actual seasons is really cool. You know, because when you lived in San Diego, it's almost like living in the Truman Show.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just always the same, you know? Yeah, and sure. So like, you know, fall comes around. Like I remember, like, I just thought it was just like an abstraction, like something,
one of my friends from a book, that you know? Grew up in San Diego, came up here with me one time and he was blown away. He's like, God damn, there's trees everywhere. I didn't realize it until we went back to San Diego. I was like, oh yeah, this is just like barren desert land with the like 5% of it nice along the coast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's really what it is, you know. Yeah, fall is beautiful. Really, I like winter, man. I like the winter trees, man, when everything's kind of dead and spooky and shit, especially with the fog. I don't know. I think it's really cool. No, if you go out to these back roads out here and you just drive around in the early morning, it's like, it's, you know, like we're in this beautiful rural community out in Jackson and Vineyard and Excelsior.
Right.
Galt, Harrell. I mean, just not too far, you know, too far away.
And before I forget, too, I do want to say, because you did say settling, you know, with the old hen, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
in a good way.
In a good way. I think, you know, now, at least the last few weeks, right, like, what I run into, I call you guys, like, how long have you been in Sacramento now?
Oh, man. Seven years.
Okay. So, I mean, I'd say, like, what the OG, you know, Sacramento's people, or not, you know, because I've been here for 5 years now. But now, right, like, maybe it's just me trying to push, like, no, Sacramento is the new Portland. Sacramento is going to, you know, be that big city, right? Yeah. So, is it really me? I mean, I believe in it, but at the same time, in the end, there is no, like, what's going to get people to come here and visit? Because, again, my friend last week, he said, when you come back in the Bay, hit me up. And if we pass, when we pass through Sacramento, I'll hit you up. And that's where I looked at that text and I was like, like, how can one way be like, no, I'll come up for a Kings game or I'll come up for the food? It's just not there yet.
So yeah, I mean,
I feel, you know, like people just don't know about it yet.
Yeah.
I feel like every time people see something cool going on here, it's like a shock to them. Like, they're blown away. Like, whoa, Sacramento is cool?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
Yeah.
You know, people are writing about it in magazines, like, you know, and it's too expensive to live in the Bay, so people are coming here.
That's real.
You know? And I think it's like, I don't know, it's getting to the point where people are just realizing this is a cool city.
Yeah.
I think I have a different perspective than, like, one, I don't think it's an old hen. And I don't think you're settling down. I've lived here. I moved back here in 04. And there was always really cool shit going on. It was just underground. You didn't know about it unless you were kind of in the culture. Yeah. And, like, there used to be behind the Spaghetti Factory on J Street. There's a big gray building there. And in the basement, there used to be a really cool, like, somewhat all ages.
Yeah, Fools Foundation.
Yeah, Fools Foundation. That place was fucking awesome. I saw so many cool bands that were, like...
It's like an old venue or something?
Yeah, it shut down. Like, they just didn't have the...
The traffic?
No, they got packed. In fact, they got, like, stinky packed in there because it was so small. And the ceiling was only, like... maybe 6'2". So, like, if you were a tall guy, you were going to have to go in there like that. And that was one of the places that was really cool. There was, down a lot of the alleyways, there was always, like, in the old warehouse buildings, there would be parties in there. Like, I went to this place called the Pink Party one time. Everybody was wearing pink. Like, there was always cool stuff going on. It's just now there's money and investments on a superficial.
Right. Yeah, I mean, come here and check it out. Yeah, I mean, that's. Like, I mean, that, you know, that leads to an interesting question, right? Like, what is the essence of coolness? Because a lot of people would say, well, yeah, now you've got these the investor class with their business plan coming in with these, like, prepackaged sort of, you know, box type of experiences.
Like, and like, the Doco thing grosses me out. Like, I don't even like,
I mean, that's
being
that's
involved
what I'm
with,
talking about, you know.
Like, Doco and, like, selling.
I don't know, dude. I went to a birthday party at Punch Bowl Social, and it was, like, the drunkest I've been in recent memory. And it was a lot of fun.
See, I like Doco, and I like the fact that a local store like Get a Clue is in there. You know?
See, like, that's cool. But, like, just the whole perspective of, like, here's a packaged image for you is what I don't like.
Yeah, well, okay, so there's a lot to unpack here. It's super interesting, right? Okay, so a couple things going on, right? Like, one is, like, you have, like, the gentrification not only on an economic level, but also, like, on a sort of, like, social and artistic level where it's, like, okay, now there is a little bit of money coming in here into town, so... Here's your entertainment experiences. We've had them all planned out for you, right? As opposed to, you know, like, kind of like OG places like the Press Club where you'd go and, like, grime with other hipsters, you know? But it's like you need a little bit of both, right? Yeah. And like, you... Like, I kind of feel where you're coming from, too, though, because I see some of these new experiences pop up, and I'm just kind of like, all right, like...
Well, and I think like Doko is made for people who are coming up from the Bay Area. Like, right. What's cool here? Yeah. They're gonna go to Doko. Right. But if you like live here, or like you're a new citizen of Sacramento, once you get to know the place, you're gonna be like, oh, I'm not going to Doko anymore. Like, I'm gonna go check out the cool place. Dude,
Doko's like, tough, man. I mean, it's not by anything.
Yeah.
Right. Like, where the fuck are you gonna park?
Right.
Right. Like, it's also. The Doko, not hating on you guys, like I really did enjoy my time at a Punch Bowl Social. We're just kind of talking these issues through, okay, right. Guys? At the Revival, it was fun. But, you know, those buildings, I know this is going to sound really nitpicky, but those you know, it's a wind tunnel. Mm-hmm. It's fucking miserable walking through that wind tunnel at night, right? Yeah. It's really cold. Even in the summer, it's cold.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, now I have where to go to cool off during the summer. Yeah. Never mind, I take back my statements.
Yeah, and then they had like the, you know, like it's just hard to anchor that area, right? Because the streets are so wide and so far apart, so it doesn't seem very walkable, right? Like those are like main arterial streets to get in and out of the city, you know? It's not like if you go to like San Diego in the Gaslamp Quarter, it's like one lane going each way, you know, where it's like, okay, the pedestrians can kind of take over. These are big, wide streets meant to get people in and out of the freeway. And then back in the day, it was kind of like, it was meant to connect us to like the, you know, the river and industrial front, you know? So it's really tough to like repackage that area, I think, you know?
Yeah.
But then there are some new places. There are some new places that kind of win me over. Like I went to Beast and Bounty with my wife the other day. And I was like, oh shit, this is all done very tasteful. You know what I mean? Even though it probably is kind of like an investor class sort of just here, you know what I mean? But it's like, I don't know. It's like, would you guys have any thoughts on that? Like when does...
Jumping in on here, I mean, for one, I like centering all types of thoughts on this, and I think that's what I think we do. Our team does a pretty good job at. You know, we do have our own thoughts. You know, and we need that, right? Because I think once we're sitting down talking about what we want to cover, we should hear about all these perspectives.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I still feel like I'm coming at it, you know, because my time in the suburbs of the Bay Area. Then I went to school in Daly City, you know, at Sacramento, I mean, SF State. Again, not really the city, but I did find my...
Yeah, like San Mateo, right? Like
it's Peninsula, you know. I did actually live there for a few years while I was commuting into the dog patch before I came up to Sacramento. So again, you know, the Bay Area just boggles my brain because it's a place that I grew up in, made my rounds, all over because of family, but then I go back there now and it's different. So, I mean, everything is evolving, every city, you know, but going back to Sacramento and then, you know, hearing about Doko, I actually find myself there, I think, a lot lately because of maybe Get a Clue, because, you know, again, that's the local place that it kind of attracts, you know, us, because like you said, what is cool? I think Get a Clue is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
That's where I got my head.
You know, yeah, right, exactly. So there you go. And, you know, Kings, I think basketball's cool. You know, when the Kings have their chance in a few years, man, dude, oh my gosh. I remember 2012, I believe that's the year, where they had a 2-week winning streak. The city was on fire.
You guys should have been here in 2004.
Oh my god! When the team was like good. I could imagine. But dude, no, I'm saying like,
I remember those
days. This is like this again. You know,
it was like a fun team to watch.
I'm not gonna bore you guys in my NBA, you know, allegiance because it just gets kind of crazy. But basketball is such a great sport that you just love the players, you know, and you just love the storylines, the drama. Anyways, but 2012, I'm a Warrior fan. Because that's my dad's team. I love Steph Curry. And the Kings were winning. And it was just crazy. I just went downtown. Everyone was talking about it. It was on fire. So I could only imagine once that happens, you know, Doko is going to be on fire. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. I think places like Ice Blocks and Doko are good because it's like you're bringing people from the suburbs that they don't want to come downtown, and then you have like a nice clean. Yeah.
Well, they definitely don't want to come downtown to go to like the old Tabernacle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like I like the
nothing
mix,
against the old Tabernacle. You know? I like them too. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I like a dive place, and then I like a clean, really nice boutique place too. You know, I like the balance of both. But I think, you know, everyone. There was a lot of mixed opinions about the Jeff Koons piece.
Wow. Sorry. Just have a cool idea in a second. Finish up.
No, you got it.
Can we all go around and say what our top... should we go top burger in Sac or top two? Or I don't want to get too crazy, but...
Oh, we're talking cheeseburgers now?
Yeah, just burger, yeah.
We're getting serious.
I just want to know now because what that one place, oh, okay, came to mind.
Dude, Empress Tavern for me lately is like amazing. They have a double cheeseburger.
Oh my god, Empress, it's called a bovada when you make an arch out of a brick. It's a bovada. Mm-hmm. Right? It's technically very difficult to do with bricks. You have to like stack them just the right way.
You're talking about the building itself.
Yeah, like
build
the arch.
You have to have the keystone and then you build.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that there already?
I don't know, man, but I went down there for lunch one time. I'm like, holy shit, this is an arch made out of bricks, man. Not any knucklehead can do. I think that might have been legacy there, but for those of you listening, that fucking building is beautiful, man.
It really is.
You know, you can't just get a fucking caveman to stack bricks into an arch, man. It's so pretty, man. Yeah. It's so pretty.
Yeah, I like that place a lot.
Okay.
What's your favorite burger place?
Just draw off the top of my head, besides In-N-Out, but Jalisco's.
Oh, where is that?
They make a burger. You go there for the
burger. Oh, I pass them all the time.
You did a Proud Show.
I didn't know they had a burger. Their Mexican food's pretty good, but I didn't know they... Because there's a bike shop right down the street from them, Mike's Bikes.
Just go. You guys go there and just message me after you're
done. Mexicans... Mexicans are the kings of street food. It's okay, I am Mexican, guys. I don't want any write-ins. Messages. I'm Mexican, okay? It's Gibran Maciel, okay? No. Mexicans are the kings of street food.
Yeah.
The kings of street food.
When I lived in Spokane, I was like the only Mexican that was in the whole entire city. And my friend, his girlfriend, we were all driving together and she was driving the car and he was up in the front and I was in the back seat.
Yeah.
And I said something, and he turned around. He's like, "You dumb Mexican!" And she goes, "Justin, don't say that." And he's like, "Say what?" She's like, "What?" I was like, "Say what? Mexican?" She goes, "Well, is that okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm Mexican. That's only fine." She's like, "Oh, I just don't know. I don't know these things. I've never met anybody who's Mexican before." Yeah.
No, it's funny because with me, there's a layer of like people say I don't look Mexican, but you know what they really mean is you don't look indigenous. Mm. You know, you don't look dark is what they really mean.
Right.
But, you know, plenty of fucking... I mean, the Spain settled Mexico, right? They just didn't totally wipe out the native population.
Some recessive genes going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say, my favorite burger?
Yeah.
The Impossible Burger at Casbah.
Casbah? Where is that?
Casbah is on J between 20th and 21st.
See, I've only had one good Impossible Burger. I'm not going to say the places that had the bad ones.
Is that the meatless burger?
Yeah. 33rd Bistro.
Oh, 33rd Bistro.
They had a really good one. I just had that the other day.
Dude, Casbah is Impossible Burger.
They're selling those? Like
they're popping up everywhere now. Yeah.
It's super good.
White Castle does one now.
Really?
Yeah. You wouldn't know? Really?
You wouldn't know. If someone just gave you the burger and you ate it, you wouldn't
I feel like I would know.
I could tell. It's still good, though. It's have all the ingredients, in 15
years, so. I feel like I'd buy it in and be like, "This is a fucking
steak." No, it gives you the texture.
Really?
But if you eat the meat just or the
by itself,
you could tell.
Okay, yeah. But when it's buried in a burger,
yeah, because it's got the right texture and it looks like beef.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good. I love good vegan food, but I'm not all the way vegan. If it's good, it's like I want to be healthy. I don't want to die. So it's like I don't want to. You can't eat beef every day, you know.
Being good, but
I mean, I'll have In-N-Out one day, and then a few days later, an Impossible Burger. So
I like the Casbah one's really, really good.
I need to check that out.
I think that's like the hidden gem on J Street is Casbah.
Yeah, I've never heard of that place.
Super good. Hella good food. My girlfriend has celiac disease.
Where is it?
It's on J between 20. There's Tapas.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's right next door. It's the hookah.
Oh, it's the hookah.
Yeah, hookah.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I know.
Belly dancing?
Yeah, I belly dance there.
Wait, so people.
Oh, you belly dance.
I mean, there is. Yeah.
You're belly dancing there?
Yeah.
My stage name.
Oh, okay.
Sir Belly Dance.
Yeah, I would pay to see that.
A lot of people pay me not to come out. Like, I have the outfit and then I start walking out.
I go back in.
Nope.
What's your favorite?
Yeah. Y'all want to know? Yeah, dude. Jim Denny's.
Oh, I love that place.
I've never been there yet, but
it's like a little trailer, man. It's like a little trailer. It's like on I and 17th or something.
It's only open till like 3.
From like 11 to 3 or something.
You know, they're a lunch crowd type of deal, man. It's really small. No, if you sit by there's like a phone on the wall. If you sit by the phone, you have to take the order. And it's kind of funny, but it's also just like they've got room for one person back
there. It's a tiny spot. There's like 9 seats.
Yeah. They jury-rigged the... They give you, like, when you order a Coke, they give you the Coke, like, with, like, kind of, like, slushy type of ice.
Mm. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and they jury-rigged, like, the... Because, you know, it's like corn syrup. Like, it's, like, the formula, and then it mixes in with soda water, you know what I mean? they jury rigged that fucking thing to like give you extra like corn syrup or something. It's like, it's really
super sweet.
It's like super. It's really good, man. It's not good for you. I can't recommend it for your health.
Yeah, once in a while.
I gotta go there. Yeah.
Do you remember Nationwide Freezer Meats?
Yeah, Nationwide.
That was my favorite. That place was they closed good. Recently, but.
I used to live just down the street from them, like three houses away.
The Juicy Lucy at the Golden Bear.
I just love that name. It's good too. But they do have a good burger.
It's a great burger. Ooh, yeah, they have good food there. I kind of had to like stop going to the Golden Bear when I sort of settled down. It's just...
It's a single spot.
I feel like it's a little bit of a single spot. It's kind of like a hipster meat market or something, you know?
It's still fun. They do have good food, though. Like, if you go in the daytime and just...
Yeah,
get a burger and a beer.
Sac City Brews right over here has the Tap House. They've got really good food.
I've not eaten there.
Oh, you got to go there, man. Their food is super good.
Yeah, I drive past there like every night. So it's on the way to my school, to ESAC BJJ. I go up 59th. And, you know, I wish they would redo that whole shopping center.
Yeah, I love the Sac City Brews. So it's the Talek Village Market. And the sign, they spent all this money last year to like paint the shop.
It doesn't.
They redid the sign, but they kept a part of the words from like the cutouts from the old sign, which was like this, it was a Cooper's font, which is like the 60s kind of like round bulbous font. Yeah. And then the other side, like they lost the letter, so they just put up whatever. And then last winter, half the letters just fell off the side of the building. And Talek, the Sac City Brews, they have a t-shirt that says, like, Talek Village on it.
It's, like, falling off.
And I was like, no, I was like, you guys got to redo the shirts where the letters are missing.
Nothing against the tenants there. Nothing against the tenants of the Talek Village, shopping center, but.
No, that grocery store's got to go. You go in there.
Dude,
I went in there one year for 4th of July when I used to live in Tahoe Park. Because we needed avocados and everybody was out. I was like, I'll try that grocery store just to see.
Yeah.
And I went in there and every single avocado was just like soup. I was like, oh gross. And there's just fruit flies everywhere.
Yeah, the shopping center needs more than a fresh coat of paint, man. But you know, it's interesting though, like going back to the sort of previous thing we're talking about, it's like where does the investor class and sort of like the movement in from the Bay Area, right? Like, you know, the Bay Area folks who are moving in, or as rent gets more expensive, there's like this like hopscotching of neighborhoods that tends to happen, where it's like, okay, like you can't afford to live in Midtown anymore, great, why don't you come on down to Talek Village or Colonial Heights or Tahoe Park and help lift up some of these communities. Nah, fuck that, I'm going to Granite Bay.
Right.
You know, where it's like, you know, Sow the Bees. I just saw this thing, I think it was in the Sac Bee, Sow the Bees, you know, auction house. They packed like a charter bus full of like Bay Area couples to come like look at properties that they might be able to afford here in the region in Sacramento. Yeah. And where'd they go?
Right.
You know, Granite Bay, right. Folsom. You
know? Well, that's the same thing happens like with all the Kings players. They always wind up buying houses out in Granite Bay. And that's why when they get traded or retire or whatever, like, oh, I didn't really have that much of a good time. Well, yeah, you were out in Granite Bay. Like, should have bought a place in Midtown or one of the surrounding Midtown neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So...
I do know one of the stars lives in Elk Grove, and the other, another starting guy lives in West Sac.
No shit.
Yeah, so I think they're getting, but those dudes are pretty young, so I think they're trying to stay close. That's the one thing while we're talking about the Kings, I feel like if you bring them down to like the mix, and if they're single or whatnot, they could be like, hey, we could run this. You know, like, we could run this. Obviously, they're superstars, but still, it's like...
I'm sure they don't need any help getting girls.
I would get, like, a penthouse if I was... You know, if I had hella money, get a penthouse downtown in Midtown.
Yeah.
I mean, I already live in a loft, you know, but...
I feel like some of them are seeing that, though. You know, like, they'll come here, like, Marvin Bagley. I bet you came here. He has friends who are young, and they're probably like, no, dude, this place is on the come up.
Yeah.
Come through. Yeah, it's only a few hours from the Bay. And it's in, you know, a few hours from LA, but come up here and just like run the city, you know what I mean? So like I think that's all, in my mind. That's
how it works. I mean, there's like a small pond allure to it to some people, right? Where it's like you can sort of like there's definitely like a cadre of sort of so called cool kids, and it's easy to sort of I think socially rise through the, you know, if you want to play that game or whatever, like. Because it's not like an LA, right? Like try being a stunner in LA, right? Like fuck,
no,
you know, you got some serious competition.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, so there's so many interesting questions with this. I'm glad we're having this discussion, right? Like,
it's fun to talk about.
like, what does it mean to be worth visiting, right? Like, you know, we don't have like a big like St. Louis Arch, or we don't have like a Disneyland or a Golden Gate. You know, we don't have like one big thing.
We have Thundertale Town or Fairy Tale Town. And what's the other one? Thunder something. The park. Sure. The little kid.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. Like, in a lot of ways,
Thunder.
You know, in a lot of ways, I feel like a lot of those attractions are kind of basic. Like, yeah. You know, it's like the St. Louis Arch. It's a photo. I don't know.
Well,
it's a photo
the lot, flip you know? Side to that though is we like, have like all the outdoor stuff that people want to do. We have lakes, big rivers. There's tons of hiking. There's lots of mountain biking. You can go. You can bicycle all over the place. Like, that's the trade-off. Like. You know, maybe, you know, bigger cities have attractions like amusement parks or much like more concert halls, stuff like that. But we've got all the outdoor appeal that, you know, like we last weekend we went up to someplace outside of Auburn to do, my girlfriend and I went with our neighbors for a fundraiser for this. It's like an animal sanctuary for livestock and like chickens that have been bred to like where basically like their crotches ruined because so many eggs came out.
Oh, my God.
And cattle and pigs and, you know, just basically from teeny tiny livestock to big giant things. And we went on this 5K around
the chickens,
the sanctuary. Yeah, it was beautiful up there. I was like, man, like
Auburn's.
Like, how lucky are we? Like a 30-minute, 40-minute drive and we're like out in the middle of this beautiful preserve where all these farm animals are and walking around. So no, that's the trade off.
Dude, it's, I mean, those, the foothill communities are gorgeous, dude. You guys ever done hip camp?
Mm-mm. No.
Hip camp is like Airbnb for camping on people's private land.
Wow.
And we went up to, not too far from Auburn, but it was like up Placerville. And, you know, that's where gold was discovered.
Yeah.
And these folks, the hosts, man, they were so gracious. They were so cool. But just to tell you a little story about what happened there, you know, they're just trying to make a little bit of extra money hosting people on this beautiful piece of land that they inherited.
Probably grow marijuana somewhere.
Yeah, I think I actually got the sense. They were really into tulips. Huh? They had like a lot, like as big as this house.
Oh, wow.
And they were just growing tulips, man. The lady was crazy for tulips. And chickens. She was into chickens.
Yeah.
And this this couple came up, you know, sure enough, from the Bay Area. They were just a couple spaces down from us. And the lady who runs the place, she says, hey, won't you please make sure your dog is on the leash because my chickens roam free. They're kind of like my pets, you know. I try not to get emotionally attached to farm animals, but you can't help it. These are gorgeous fucking chickens. And I said, sure, no problem, you know. She says, especially because he's intact, meaning the dog hadn't been neutered. He's aggressive, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, sure, no problem, you know. And what do these city slickers do? What do these city slickers do? But they go on a hike and they, you know, let their greyhound off the fucking leash. Mm-hmm. And the greyhound plays it cool for all of about 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. He's just going, and then right when like the owner looks away, just bam, darts it right to the owner's like homestead, and grabs like this beautiful orange chicken. You know, just grabs this beautiful orange chicken, and the last thing anybody saw was this greyhound like darting across the property, like behind one of the hills with this chicken. Dude, the chicken was like flapping its wings in its mouth, you know, and you could hear it like crying and stuff. And this little motherfucker, man, what'd he do? He thrill killed it, and then he, like, went back to, like, a corner of the property and just buried it for fun.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Yeah.
It was weird. So, you know, there's some, like, natural tensions, right, between, like, the city slickers and the people who sort of live out there. But it was funny. It was funny, too, because the way this hip camp worked was they had this pizza oven. It was, like, 7,000 pounds of brick and hay and clay and shit, you know? Wow. And you could bring, like, your own little stuff. And, like, it was kind of a social thing, too. Like, you can all sort of, like, just kind of reflect on it. They had this, like, outdoor kitchen type of deal. It's fucking gorgeous. But everyone has to get along there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they're feeling, like, really, like, oh, can we even go down and cook our
chicken? Yeah, I would have been like, here's $50 for your chicken. We're out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But then the guy, dude, this guy had hands like he'd been working like a carpenter his whole life, you know?
You know, so the guy who owned the dog?
The guy who, the property owner. It's like a man and wife, you know? And they were smoking some of their own product, I get the sense, you know? He was just smoking and drinking and he was having a good time. But he tells us, you know, it all got quashed. Like, I think they paid him and it worked out. But he tells them, hey, you guys want to go into a mine shaft? You know, this is, it's gold country. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, not really, you know? And he's like, yeah, it'll be cool. My wife is like, yeah, yeah, you know. My wife has very strong faith, so if she meets her maker, she's okay. But I don't have that in me, and I don't want to lose my life in a fucking mine shaft. She's like, yeah, let's do it. And then, like, the other guys around the campfire are like, I don't particularly want to go down a fucking mine shaft. And the guy's telling us about the mine shaft. He's like, it's U.S. Geological Survey. It's off the map. No one knows about it. You know, it wasn't. You know, it's not reinforced. It's just, it's a home. It's a, sketchy. It's a home. Is it full DIY. Of vampires? Is that what yeah. Is it's this... a home DIY, like, you know, because people are still gold mining up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, not really. And all the girls are like, yeah, we think it'd be fun. So what do you know? They take, you know, they take us up there, and we against my better judgment, we jumped in. We jumped in, and you can. What do you know, dude? It was like 200 feet down into the mountain. It's like really cold in there. Mm-hmm. You know. And he says, don't touch any of the roots, because that could bring the whole thing down on you. So don't touch any of the roots. Don't touch anything on the side. The portal, which is where you walk in, don't touch that at all, because that's where it'll that's collapse.
Good. I'm just going to look you know? From the entrance
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
The flashlight.
Maybe I'll just zoom in with my yeah. camera. That's good enough.
And then he says, you know, if you look on the side, you can see where the axes were hitting to dig further in. And you can actually see, like, the axe marks.
Yeah.
You know? It's like you go a little further and you can see the fingernails of people who yeah. tried to crawl yeah. out.
But I mean, that, you know, I didn't want to go in, and I'll never do it again, but I'm kind of glad that I did do it, you know. But that's the kind of, like, just fucking incredible beauty that we have up here, you know. It's like, where else are you going to go into a hillbilly mine shaft,
right?
You know, in the middle of nowhere. And this property was fucking gorgeous, dude, yeah. you know. And it's just 30 minutes away, you know. So it's tough, like, how do you sell that, right? Like, how do you sell, like, hey, guys, there's incredible experiences just now, and, like, it doesn't really lend itself to being like a tourism center unless you have like 2 weeks to kill to see it all or something, right. you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's almost backwards because it's like,
yeah,
stay here to go out there. You know, it's not.
Yeah, that's mean? Interesting.
Like, but yeah, I feel like there's things going on in the city that it's more than just being in between here and Tahoe or whatever. Yeah, like, I feel like maybe we don't have a monument, but we have events, food, yeah. culture. Yeah. Like, well, it's like more of an experience than right. going to just see like a monument or,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's the beauty of Aaron's, you know, starting the Proud Show, which became the Proud Network, is yeah. he highlights the people that you should be paying attention to.
Right.
Like, oh, these folks are doing stuff that make the city cool that maybe you've never even heard of.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
And that's, you know, I think that's what the Proud Network kind of bridges, is like stuff that maybe like TV news, the B and News and Review, or even like what's the news
magazine?
Oh. the music magazine
Submerge,
yeah, like those guys might miss these things that like
yeah
that we pick up.
Yeah,
like I'd never even heard of, you know,
this guy. What,
yeah, Naveed, until I started watching it.
Goofball.
Yeah, and then started seeing the yeah. t-shirt show, and I was like, oh.
I mean,
there's not a platform for a lot of this stuff. Right. I mean, music and art, yeah, there's like magazines and like things, but, you know, we're kind of picking up on things that are untapped, untouched, you know.
Right. And I mean, we live in the day, we live in the world where you need to put a face to what you do, because it helps. It cuts through the noise, you know, if you're an artist or if you run a restaurant. I mean, some people are like, no, video is not for me. I don't want to be in front of camera. Even artists are like, I'm good, but.
Oh, those days are gone.
It's going to help. You know, it's going to help get a few more bucks in your pocket. It's going to help get more people in the door. Because in the end, I think it hit me one time. I was a huge Strokes fan, you know, the band.
Yeah.
For forever. And it was a time where 2008, you know, I think Napster and all those, LimeWire, someone told me, was like, hey, you know, in the future, you're going to have subscribe, you're going to have all songs you want. I'm like, what? I was like, how did that work? That wasn't the story. But still, it was about the Strokes having a new album. And at that point, I wasn't really making too much money. I was in LA, working at odd-end jobs. But then I started becoming friends with, maybe call them YouTubers, because I was like working closely with them. But now they're influencers. So I had a choice. Give $10 to this guy that I just saw, blew my socks off, or spend $10 on the Strokes.
Yeah.
So, and then I remember going like, oh, I know my answer. I'm going to give it to this guy. Because the Strokes, they've made it. Not to mention Julian Casablancas is a Coppola, you know what I mean? And he's just a rich, you know, alcoholic who makes really good music that I really like. But in the end, I was over it. I was like, dude, like, that's, I don't know, man. There's something about this guy, he's that about his struggle, about his it's hustle. It's more, like,
relatable.
It's more relatable, man. So I was like, take my money. You know, here, have my money. And, I mean, that comes back to Sacramento, comes back to the Proud Network. It's also saying, like, hey, let's get you on camera. And, again, mostly everyone's, like, down. Let's go. Where do we start? Because, honestly, it's going to help. And then everyone sees it. Everyone wants a video. So, obviously, I think, you know, it's like we're hitting our gold rush in video, in providing content. But also doing it the right way. Because I feel like because all the noise and the people that just pick up a camera, let me just film. And I hear a lot of, I make visuals. You know what I mean? Visual music videos, visual cover events, but I do visuals. And I watch, they're not storytelling, right? So, like, again, that's another main key to, you know, the Proud Network is we're going to tell a story in a video that's digestible, that is shareable, and in the end, you know, you get to go to work tomorrow and say, hey, have you been to Everest Tavern and ate their burger? And you're like, no, I haven't. Someone on the other side is like, oh, I have. And then out of nowhere, this guy who saw our content is now the cool guy, you know, in his work. And that's just how we work, you know, because in the world we live in today, and that's what we're trying to provide, you know, and I mean, it's an exciting time, you know, everything is happening organically, you know, we're not doing it because, you know, we want to be cool, but we're doing it because, you know, like we said, we're sharing things that we think should be out there and shared.
Right? Have a spotlight showing on it.
So how to move from the Proud Show to the Proud Network, like, what's the difference there?
Yeah, it's a great question. The Proud Show was me running around saying, you know, just like Prickly Pear, for example. She's a really cool girl who did succulents.
Yeah.
And she was like, I feel like I have, like, you know, if you follow, like you said, there are, you know, because we still live in a small big town, if you follow enough people, you could be tapped in pretty easily, I think. So when you're like, hey, everyone's talking about Prickly Pear. So me going like, hey, can I do a video on you? And obviously she's like, I'm really busy, but yeah. So I just, you know, at my lunch, went over, filmed an interview, filmed B-roll that evening or the, you know, just kind of like what we're doing here. Cut it up.
Yeah.
Put it out. You know, and in the end, I started doing that a lot to the point where obviously people are like,
well, it's not sustainable if you're the only one, right?
Yeah. There's that, you know, and for sure. But in the end too, I think after like 45 episodes, very similar to that,
yeah,
I wasn't even challenging myself as an artist, right? And I still struggle to call myself that every day, mainly because, you know, my day job is a producer, and I feel like there's a fine line between producing and then being an artist.
Yeah.
But I feel more confident as I go because it's like video is art, you know what I mean? And but at the same time, to be smart about it, writing the correct equation in which the time spent on producing it, editing it, and putting it out, making sure that it's getting distributed correctly, because all that time was just spent on it. That's a whole pre-production, production, and post, right? Like, if you don't pay attention to all those phases, why did you even do it? You know what I mean? So it's like, but then you always ask, I always say, when we first start this, it's a blank canvas. And because people ask me that too, it's sustainability. You know, in the end, it's like, the way I put it, the artist in me goes like, I'm going to make these videos anyways, just like a painter, like Navid, he's going to take a blank canvas, he's going to draw on it because he feels inspired. Maybe a song just clicked and he's going to do it. Like, he's not going to just say, hold up, I'm not going to put a ink on that canvas until I know I'm getting paid. You know what I mean? Like,
you have to get these ideas out.
You just have to do it. Yeah.
And it's like, you're seeing these people, these creatives, and you're like, well, if no one else is going to put a spotlight on them,
right,
let me tell this story.
Exactly.
And I think that's like, we're lucky to have that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's why I want to help as much as I can, because I think, you know, I believe in what you're doing, and what we're doing is, you know, a collective, you know?
Yeah, is that, and like,
So moving it to the network allows more people to sort of help out.
Yeah, and going full circle there, I know I went on a tangent or two, but like Manavi said, it is going back to saying, okay, this is my art, this is what I provide, so let me give you that platform. But then to answer your question, what's the difference between the show and the network, sustainability is huge, because I was like, the challenge and sustainability of going like, it's just, to me, I'm just filming you.
This is, I mean, Sacktown Talks is barely sustainable for me, and I'm not cutting up video.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I make little, like, actually, you know, I've been at it for about a year. Like, the production time has greatly decreased as I've gotten better at it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even this. I mean, even this is hard to do, right? Sure. And I couldn't imagine, like, having to run to locate, you know, having to run to locations. I've had any, you know, it's so funny. It's like, they say, like, I've had any number of friends like, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you go over here and talk to these people? It's like, why don't you fucking do it? Like, why don't you, like, yeah, you know, it's like, why don't they come to my studio and we can just have
a talk? Well, that's the plan, like, with the network is eventually, you know, a lot of this is going to be taken off of Aaron, and he'll and Navid are going to be more like creative directors overseeing stuff. And because nothing is sustainable if you don't have people underneath you that can do it without you
partners,
being... well, more like employees and like an art creative, where you can't sustain stumping if it is solely dependent upon you being there. So it's not a success unless one of us can step away and it still functions. And I don't mean like leaving, but like if like, hey, I'm going to go work on this new thing that I'm really excited about. Yeah. Bob, you're going to take over. Or Jill, we're going to have you take over this now. You've worked really hard on 12 episodes. We have faith in you. To now be the manager and the, you know, the director of this, of the show that was his baby, but now it's going to be somebody else's.
Yeah.
So that's part of the network too, is like developing an art community with video and editing and sound, where these people can run these shows. It's now their project, or they can come to us and say, hey, I've got this idea for a show. And, you know, like, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's, you know, do a test. Put a test pilot. Episode together, or pilot. Yeah, there we go. Put a pilot together for us, and let's see if it works with us. And if it doesn't, we'll at least give you some guidance and help, so you can go off and do it on your own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's important to us. Yeah. Like that's one of the things we really want to have inside the Proud Network, is like a really healthy culture of of growth and acceptance in art. Like, that's really being important positive. To us. Yeah,
and like, history does repeat itself. You know, when TV came, because it was a box to put ads on, you know. So it's like, that, you know, we learned that in film school or wherever the hell I learned it, was TV was created because they wanted to just sell ads. And then they started creating shows, you know, around these ads. But movies were like, look at this little box, little, you know, that's petty, that's sad. But look where TV's at today. I mean, you could even argue, you know, with Netflix and all that streaming, it's even different now. But when the internet came, really hard ten years ago, same thing, you know, movie and TV was laughing at the internet. Like, look at this thing, you know, it's not the, you know, the level of making movies or making TV. So it's petty. It's our little brother. It's not that cool. But you can't, at some point, to now to today, you know, we are literally living in the future.
Well, no, there's only so far you can ignore a dragon.
Yeah, millions, I millions.
Mean, well, there's always someone that breaks the mold of like, oh, this is why you should be.
No, I mean, like, the TV guys, the TV and the communications people knew. They tried to buy the internet, right? They, like, all those fuckers tried to, like, now it's like AT&T and like Comcast and like, they're all like buying ABC. They're all buying like the, you know, like distribution outlets, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so it's all like sort of conglomerating into one big thing.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, it's the eyeballs, right? There's millions upon millions.
Yeah, you're really just internet, in the, yeah, you're really so. Just, yeah, you're in the, like, what, like, meta business are you in, right? Like, Vince McMahon is like the owner of the WWF, right? And there's this famous exchange that happened between him and one of his competitors. And they called Vince McMahon. I forget who the competitor was. It was the owner of the WCW, you know, where Sting wrestled back in the day.
Right.
They called Vince McMahon, and gosh, who was the millionaire? I think it was Ted Turner.
Okay.
But he called Vince McMahon and says, hey, Vince, I just wanted to let you know I'm in the wrestling business now. And Vince McMahon was like, well, that's cute. I've always been in the entertainment industry. Click. Yeah. And so he like had like a broad understanding. He was like, well, wrestling is just, no, like, I'm here to entertain, you know? Like, wrestling's a vehicle to win.
Yeah, there's drama, and it's almost soap opera, I mean, with wrestling.
Oh, dude, wrestling, for any of my political friends that might be interested, you know, I spent some time in the Capitol, I think some of those folks might still be listening. You know, if you want to understand, like, campaigning and narrative and storytelling and sort of natural sympathies, just watch some old pro wrestling, man. You know, like they do such good jobs of sort of like swaying the crowd. That's why Donald Trump did so well on the campaign. Not that I'm a fan of him, but like he understood when the camera was on him. He understood how to draw out natural sympathies. He understood sort of call and retort. Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't know so much sympathies as like ire.
So, you know, call and retorts like, you know, if you smell what the Rock is cooking, and then everyone kind of says it with you, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what he would do with, like, build the wall, you know?
Yeah.
There's, like, a lot of, like, you know, storytelling devices sort of in that genre. But I guess back to the point was, like, you know, sort of understanding, like, the meta industry that you're in. Like, sort of, like, you know, YouTube, Netflix, the movies, you know, and TV. It's kind of, like, all turning into, like, one thing, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, and, like, well, it's an interesting line, too, right? It's, like, you know, Netflix... Like, the season finale of a Netflix show might be an hour and 45 minutes long, because they don't have that. You know, so what, did I just watch a movie?
Right.
Like, you know. For sure. And now, and movies are getting shorter now, too. So it's like, wait, why do I have to go to this movie theater? Like,
yeah.
that could have been a 75-minute Netflix show.
Right.
What's going on here? You know? Right. I don't know. So it's, like, it's an interesting time for art.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know? Naveed, you're an artist. When did you start making shirts? Like, what? Just take us through your artistic journey real quick. Like,
pretty much always made art since I was a kid. Just, you know, everything from cartoons to like photo reel sketches and stuff. But you know, maybe like 10 years ago, I wanted to start making T-shirts, so I started doing T-shirts. And 5 or 6 years ago, started Extra Cheese, and just came up with the name so I could put it in boutiques and have like a collection.
Got it.
But it just kind of happened naturally. Like, I'm not a business-minded person, so I do, like, I'm creative first, business last, or second, or, you know. But, this is just something. I want to wear these T-shirts, so I make them for me.
Yeah, I like the DeLorean.
Thanks, that's man. Slick. This is just a concept car. This is my new one. But, but yeah, I'm a visual person. I paint. I used to DJ, so like sound. I'm influenced by creation. Music a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But I love clothing and T-shirt design and stuff, so it just kind of naturally happened.
So your preferred medium was like painting. You're like, wait, let me throw some of these designs on a shirt or.
Yeah, just drawing and painting. And it's a lot of my T-shirts were just sketches I did or drawings I did, and then I turned it into a T-shirt.
That's cool. So. That's cool. And so, what you like when you have like this collection of shirts? You approach like a Get a Clue store and you say, "Hey, like, do you want to sell these, or how does that work?"
Yeah, it's real. Like, I'm only in 5 boutiques.
Okay.
So I've like Get a Clue, for instance. I had shopped there since I was a little kid. So I just approached the owners and I asked them like if I could sell my product there, and they were really cool. They just said, "You know, we'll try it out. We'll see how it goes."
Yeah.
And it, you know, it performed okay. So I just, it actually like motivated me to make more stuff. But when I was living in Santa Cruz, I got to know some guys that had a boutique called The Crate. And I started selling my shirts there initially. And then when I moved back to Sacramento, I got it in Get a Clue and Good Stock. And it's something that I love to do. And, you know, I do make money off of it, but it's the ideas and just getting my ideas out are, you know, my priority.
Yeah.
So I don't always think about like, oh, this is going to be the T-shirt design that I know is going to hit and make me money. I might want to wear that T-shirt, so I make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's more like you're just kind of expressing yourself. And if people want to buy it, they do. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah, I'll make like 100 like MF Doom, or, you know, I'll make a T-shirt. If it does well, I'll make it again. I'll reprint it.
Yeah, and so far that's been working.
Yeah, I mean, I don't make like 1,000 at a time. I'll make like 100 T-shirts at a time, put them in boutiques, sell them online.
Yeah,
and then, you know, I just keep making.
Can people buy your shirts like directly from you?
Yeah, I have a website now that Aaron actually helped me put together.
It's, Extra Cheese.
ExtraCheeseCA.com.
Do you number the shirts?
No,
you should number them, like an art print. You know, you only have like 100.
Especially if you're only doing 100. Man.
Yeah, you should number them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just.
It's like me. Oh, you should.
If I hand drew them, maybe, or, you know, I want to do, I used to do collaborations with friends that, you know, they tie-dyed them and stuff like that. So I think if I did like ones that
it's like a little bit more like up-leveled, or
like if I hand screen them or something that's like I personally made it, I think I would number them. But you know, these are shirts that like my friend Rudy makes these, and I work with other screen printers. But yeah, I think it's more. I don't even sign half my art, to be honest. I think it's just I want to get the idea out.
Yeah.
And then whether they even know if I did it or not, I don't really care. It makes me happy to see people like you're wearing that shirt. And,
oh, dude, you know, it's one of my favorite shirts.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Man. I mean, that just makes me happy to see people, you know, wearing the stuff. So.
Can I tell you a story when we first started hanging out with Naveed?
Yeah, I was about to ask you guys, like, how do you guys all know each other?
Well, the story I was going to say, I think I was quick to tell people, like, hey, this guy, he made the shirt that you're wearing. It was a busser, I think.
Golden Bear, actually.
Yeah, it's the guy who was, like, busing. He's not having a good time. It was, like, a Friday night. He was doing his job. And, you know, I think I had a few drinks. I don't drink, but I had a few drinks that night, only because, like, my heart palpitations. I was like, hey, what's up, man? And he was like, what? And I was like, this guy made your shirt. And this guy, I mean, that's what's cool about Naveed, because he's just like,
whatever.
You know, he's just like, it's cool. I mean, he takes pride in that, but he's not out there going like, yeah, you know. The conversation was hilarious, because the guy turned around and looked at Naveed, and Naveed's like, and then he looked at Naveed and he goes, I mean, I know you can't see what they're doing, but they just gave each other little head nods. Not even head nods. He just looked at him, and then he left. And then I remember going like, all right, well, I'm probably not going to do that ever again. But, you know.
Yeah, I feel like I used to get really excited when I would see people wear my shirts when I first started doing it. I was like, hey, I made that shirt. And a lot of times I would get the reaction like,
yeah,
so what, dude? Go fuck yourself or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck
but
off,
I mean,
dude.
Like, I think I appreciate it now, like, from a distance, like, oh, cool.
Right.
That person's wearing my shirt.
Yeah, not everyone is like, I think me, maybe like yourself, where if you did meet him, I'd be like, dude, this is my favorite shirt. Like, and I appreciate it's what you made, and it made it basically hit a chord with me.
So, yeah, I mean, like, the way in which you choose to consume, or in which people seem to want to consume different mediums of art. Mm. Is really interesting in and of itself, right? Joe Rogan talks a lot about this. So, like, with, like, really prominent musicians and bands, it's like, don't give me your new shit. Give me that one song that I grew up listening to, you know? And for whatever reason, like, with a really prominent musician and band, you kind of want to be in the same room when they're playing it. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, if it's a painting, I don't give a shit. Like, you just hang it up when you're done. Give me a print, you know? And it's like, with comedians, on the other hand, it's like, what, same material? Give me something new. It's the opposite, right? And so, I mean, just like all these different formats lend themselves to different things. You know, like for me personally, I don't care for live. Like, I don't know. I don't feel any more connected to it if I'm there or not, but I know a lot of people do, you know, with regards to music. And then like T-shirts and stuff, like that's its own little genre, right? Like, and I guess people connect they connect to the art in different ways, I guess is what I'm saying, right? Like, like I like to play soccer, but I can't watch it really. I can watch it here and there. It's cool live.
Right.
But like on TV, it's hard for me to follow.
For sure.
Like out of all the art I make, the thing about T-shirts is it's the best way to communicate an idea. And then you're walking around with an idea on your on your chest, you know? So it's like I make paintings and then it ends up in one person's house.
And that's it.
But the T-shirts, they live. They, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They might get resold to Goodwill or something. They might be given away.
I mean, or just thrown away or just worn till they fall apart. I mean, it's just, it's something you live with. And it's like, you know, it's a good feeling.
It's almost
an identity. Yeah, it's like your second skin or your clothes. Like, that's why I've always been so into clothing and fashion, because it's like, I think that's how I've expressed myself since I was a kid, you know, but... yeah, that's just a good feeling, because someone has to really love the design to walk around with it on their bodies. So,
yeah. It's an interesting thing too, right? Like it's sort of like advertising for you too, but it's not necessarily like why they chose to wear it.
But that's also why I wanted to have a brand that isn't so much about a brand, it's about an idea. It's like, okay, some people just literally like cheese.
Yeah.
So they want to wear this T-shirt that says cheese. But, you know, it's also, like, about getting more out of life. And then, for me, it's just a play on words. So it's aspirational, but it's also, I'm just making food references, too, half the time. So I just try to have fun with it. And you know, I wanted to make something that's not just like a hype beast streetwear brand, but just something that like an old man could wear, because, you know, I've had photographers buy the t-shirts because it says cheese on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know.
And then other people that they just like cheeseburgers. And,
right.
You know, that's why I started this, because it's just something that's what's authentic to me, is like wearing things that speak to me, that make sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes sense too, because like, again, you listen to MF Doom, you know, like, I remember, like you said, cheese, I've got that, you know, because I do video. So they're like, hey, it makes sense. And I'm like, oh, I mean, okay. But in the end, too, I feel the way I consume your stuff is also trying to be true to myself. You gave me an MF Doom shirt, and I was like, I don't know if I wear this, because I don't know MF Doom. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, but I know it's your work, but, again, it's how I express myself. And if I'm wearing that, and someone goes, yo, MF Doom, I'll be like, yeah, I don't know. It's just my buddy. You know what I mean? So that's why don't wear that shirt. You know what I mean? It's a dope shirt, but, like we said, that's
you how you don't want to be a poser.
Don't want to be a poser.
Well, I'd recommend anybody to take like an hour out of their day and listen to Mad Villainy. Okay. Specifically,
that's
that
a good place to start. I mean, yeah. But he's been around since like the early 90s. He was in a group called KMD. And, you know, so he's been around, and it's like, you've heard his music.
Right.
But I appreciate the fact that you're just like, yeah, I like your design, but this doesn't speak to me, so I'm not going to wear it. And that's like, you know, that's really important, I think.
I mean, he did dumb me the person who has the most extra cheese stuff here in Sacramento, or in the world, because, yeah, either, I think I just steal it.
I think my mom wears it more than I do.
Wait, so how did you guys meet? Like, how do you guys all
meet? We met through a mutual friend, and then he asked me if I wanted to do an episode of Proud Show, and then we just kind of just started hanging out and working on stuff ever since.
Cool. All right, well, looks like we got to get you guys out of here.
Tomorrow. Yeah, we have about an hour. Interview at 6:30.
Sorry about that.
No, that's good. Let me get you guys out of here. Where can folks find you online? YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, it's a Proud Show.
Yeah, I mean that's a big question, and it's a big answer for you, because we're making a website, and that's where our content, our video content, our podcast, all our content. That in the end, the Proud Network is everybody, right? So like we're almost like opening our doors to creators who want to. Kind of a bump in production value. I mean, you know, look at your production value. This is killer. You know what I mean?
Thanks.
So, you know, everyone's going to have a different approach to that open door thing. Like, I'm good. I'm cool. But sales, you know what I mean? Having a sales team, also having other venues where some of Navid fans could go on the site and go like, wait, I'm going to start consuming this person now because I like it. You know, right? So that's our hub. You know, it's going to be a website.
So what's the website?
We don't have it yet.
Right, but now it's just Instagram.
Oh, we actually do have it.
And YouTube.
Yeah. It's going to be the proudnet.com. Okay. But we are on the socials, obviously.
So where can folks find you right now?
At the proudnet.
At the proudnet. Yeah, there you go.
Not network, but the net. But again, it's a big question, because in the end, we want to take all that we're doing on socials and put it on the website, because
eventually everything's gonna direct back to the Proud Network website.
Okay,
because again, the restraints of creating a 1 minute show, you know, like that's just putting handcuffs on a creative, you know, saying like, cool, put 18 hours on one of our shows, I can make that is literally close to 18 hours of work, and we put it on Instagram, right? Where someone down the street is putting up one picture, and that person is getting more views. You know, and again, I don't want to get into a view conversation, because you know that just gives me headaches. But in the end, you know, our content is, there's more time put into it, because it's literally a production.
Well, the audience is going to see the value. Like, mm-hmm. They'll know it's worth their time because of the work these guys put into producing a segment.
Yeah.
Like, they'll see. You know, I think that's the difference between.
Yeah, it's not a competition, though, right?
It's not a competition, but there is value in, like, the effort of work. You know, like, the work you put into it, that's what makes people come back around and be like, oh, this is worth my time. Like, I do advising on the side for, like, podcasting and stuff like that. And one of the things I always tell my clients is, like, the effort you put into your show, the audience is going to pick up on that. So they're going to
like
know,
anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. If you put the effort in, people will know it's worth their time. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what these guys do with their shows. Yeah. It's worth the audience's time.
Yeah, and it's
I think that's what he's trying to say.
Well, I mean, it's not a competition. It's more of like it's the platform, right? So I've never had to have constraints because Instagram has a minute, right? So it's like so it's like again telling Naveed saying, "All right, paint what you want to paint, but here's a small little canvas," and he's like, "What?" You know what I mean? Like so that's not fair. You know what I mean? So it's not fair to, and yeah, by no means it's a competition. If anything, people who create, that's inspiration to me, at least, personally. So again, that person down the street in the neighborhood who putting up a picture and getting all those views, that's inspiring me to get off my butt, put down the Fortnite, and start editing what I need to edit, right? So again, but you know, that could be misseen as that, but in the end, it's like we're trying to create something big, you know, but then Instagram, who could change their platform tonight if they wanted to, and someone told me this, a YouTube creator said, being a YouTuber is hard because it's like opening up a restaurant in a city, and you have parking, you have all the one ways, all you know, the streets set up so that you're good, right? But then the next day, the city goes, "Wait, hold up. Let's close down that street. Let's put this and that, and make it so that it's difficult to get to your restaurant." And then that's only gonna, go downhill from there. So you know, all the internet from YouTube, Instagram, all those platforms could change. Once those change, because you don't have power, that just messes what you're trying to do. And, and we've only been at it, the Proud Net show, the Proud Net, 2 years now, but us three for a few months, and we're putting hard work, putting a lot of time, and we don't want Instagram to go, because they don't care what we're doing. I mean,
Instagram could just delete your account and not tell you why. I mean, these things happen for sure, right? So it's like, do you want to take advantage of the fact that people are on the platform, or do you want to be in an unconstrained environment? It's tough for sure. I think that a lot of folks are sort of experimenting with that, right?
They're all beautiful platforms, and not talking any down to any of it. It's just like we need to be on our own playground. We need to be on a blank canvas, and that's a website, And Mayuf even said, are people going to go to your website? And it's like, I don't care. We're going to make it. We're going to build it, and just so that it's there, and we can take a step back and say, there it is. We're actually putting people that we think should be highlighted, because in the end, again, that's kind of what we're doing. That's like, makes us, feel good every day that we could put Sacramento on some type of map.
Sure. Okay. So again, to connect with you for now, the Proud Net.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And it's on Instagram.
It's on Instagram.
Yeah, we post weekly on Instagram.
Okay. Yeah.
For the time being.
Yeah, you guys are doing those updates.
Yes, that's a new thing.
Those are cool. Keep doing those.
For sure. That's my sister.
Is that your sister?
So again, everything is
she's doing a good job.
Thank you. Everything's so tight, man. Because again, Johnny could back me up. We don't like to ask people for free work, but people are going to help build this for us. So that's a catch-22. We don't like to ask people for free work, but we need help. So we're going. I've known Johnny for about 4 years now through his girlfriend, who I worked with. Again, I think everything happens organically, and the fact that we're sitting together making this happen. We're friends, we're family, we're tight knit. And then, like you said, my sister, just my sister. So it's like, hey, can you come over? It's 10 a.m., but we need to shoot tomorrow's episode. And she's there, So I could tip my hat to her as well. But in the end, we're trying to make it the brand look, killer, look clean. But in the end, it's just, there's only a few people behind it, So
for now. It'll get there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it.